Okay, we're going to start with Tasha with this morning. We have been going through and looking at God makes covenants and promises. But all the ones we've been looking at so far have had conditions. And we've seen how people fall woefully short of the conditions. But God does not just forsake them. He punishes them in some way or the other and move on. And we saw that, like with Moses, it even cost him being able to go into the promised land. We're going to look at Joshua today. We're looking at these examples. What's a good reason for us to look at these examples?
To learn about God and how he deals with his people and what his expectations are.
Because he has expectations of us, too. And so if we realize that God, we can't just do things and God not know about it. And God knows, God cares. He's promised us a way of escape. Satan is after us and he is tempting us. But God is always there to help us. And so we're going to look at Joshua and his issues today. Let's turn to Joshua chapter 1. Sally, would you read verse 5 through 7, please? Sally.
Joshua.
Chapter 1, verse 5 through 7. Your sword not working? Whatever you use. Okay, let me come back to you. Or you found it? Okay.
Now there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life, as I was with Moses. So I will be with thee, and I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people which shalt thou divide for an inheritance of the land, which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to do all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, that thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein, for then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded you? Be strong and of good courage, be not afraid. Neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine now. Okay, so. You're going to check that? Okay, thanks. Okay, so what did God tell Joshua to do? And there's a list of things, and there's at least three. What did he tell him to do in these verses? Aurora? Okay. Be strong. Was Joshua going to need strength?
Yes.
He had seen what these people had been to Moses since they left Egypt. He knew what the problems were going to be. They weren't going to automatically just turn a switch because Moses has died and now Joshua is leading the people. And he's also going to have to be very courageous. Did it lock on?
As far as I could tell.
it's one thing to be strong, but then you got to do something. You know something's wrong, and you're strong in that, but you've got to be courageous, step out, and do what is required. And then he tells him, be careful to do it according to the law. That's right. And how is he going to know what the law and the commandments are?
Meditate day and night.
So these are things that, do they just apply to Joshua in his situation?
No.
They're very important to us. There are times when we need strength. There are times when there's troubles in our family. There's time when there's troubles in the congregation. There's times when there's troubles in the nation. And it's, you don't know what's going to happen. But if we meditate on God's law, whatever our situation is, whatever our trial that we're faced with, we can get through it. And at least most of the time in our situations, we have family. We have especially our spiritual family. Your physical family may have no interest in doing what you're doing, but you have a good group and a core that you can turn to help you. Joshua, like with Moses, Moses had Joshua and a very few other men that he could depend on. Joshua and Caleb, I guess, they were the only ones that were strong through all of this. And they're not talking. Caleb is not mentioned very much after going in, but Joshua is mentioned several times because he's at the foot of the mountain waiting for Moses to come down. When Moses would go in to speak to the Lord, he would stand outside the tabernacle or the tent and wait for him to come out. So Joshua has had a bird's eye view of what he's in for. But these are the things that God told him that he needed to do, and they will help us through many, many troubles and trials if we were to use those same things. And what would be the result if he did what he was told, according to verse 7?
Lord, my father's with me.
That's right. And what else will happen?
Verse 8, it says that he will succeed.
Okay, it was in verse 8. Sorry.
Yeah, he will succeed.
I put the wrong verse.
And he'll succeed. And that's a lesson for us, too. If you want to really grow in the Lord, you want to obey the Lord, be good at his sight, be strong, do the same thing, just like you said. We'll succeed. People doubt, you know, that this, I can't do this, this is too hard. But Joshua could not doubt. He had to be brave.
Are we going to face anything in our lifetime probably like Joshua and Moses faced? No, the kind of pressure they were under to try to keep these people doing right and going in the right direction. And so if we want success, we're going to have to do those same four things. Okay. At the end of his life, he's about to leave. He's about to die. What does he tell the people? Let's turn to Joshua chapter 23, verse 6. Susan, you read that, please. What did he tell them they're going to have to do? Be very firm. Is that just kind of squishy? You know, you kind of squeak by and do the least you can. So you've got things you've got to stand firm about. And these people, and he says, don't turn to the right hand or to the left. In other words, you do all that's written. And that's what he tells them. Do all that is written in the book of the law or Moses, of Moses, so that you won't turn aside, right or to the left. That's what's going to keep us on the straight and narrow. We have to know God's word. We have to do God's word. That's what's important. It's not pleasing our friends, not being the popular one, not always being somebody that people can come to and know that they're going to go away feeling great about themselves when they leave. Is it always good? It's good if you can do that, but is that always possible when somebody comes to you and their life's in a mess?
You know, sometimes we're accused of having a hard heart if we, you know, we're very strict. Mm-hmm. And this word means to
purpose or to be firm or to have a hard heart, you know, just like Ezra purposed in his heart to grow in the Word. And so it's more than just a haphazard thing. We have purpose. We have to keep on the narrow way, keep it in our mind and not let anything take it out.
But we have to, when we're firm, what people don't understand when they accuse you of being hard-hearted, it's not just being firm. It's in the right thing, in the right way. Sometimes people, it's their fault they're where they're at. But they don't want to hear that. They want it to be somebody else's fault. It can't be my fault. I'm unhappy. I can't do this. I'm not going to do this anymore. Well, sometimes you just have to get happy and realize that everything doesn't go your way. And it has to be God's way. We have to be God-centered if we want to have the rewards that are promised in the covenant, even in the covenant that God has with us today.
Can you imagine how the woman and Dave got here because it's one of the things that don't associate with the nations and don't intermarry if one of your daughters or son comes and says, Mama, I'm in love with this person and you've got this hard heart and I'm not doing this, I'm not going to let you do this.
They would not have had that issue had they done what God told them in the first place. What did God tell them about the nations?
Drive them
all out or kill them, get rid of them, don't have anything to do with them. But they never, as we're going to see as we go through the next section on the Israelites, they never did that. From the time Joshua died on, and they were on their own pretty much without a good strong leader, they just fell apart. Had God, let's see if God kept his promises. Joshua 23:14. Joanne, would you read that, please?
Now behold, today I am going away with all the earth. You know with all your heart and in all your souls that not one word of all the good words which the Lord your God spoke concerning you has failed. All have been fulfilled for you, not one of them has failed.
So, had God kept his promises according to this verse? Every single one, yes. Every single one. Now, that doesn't mean that the land's all been taken and everything's done and they can just go in and sit down and do nothing. Even after Joshua dies, there's more of the land left to be conquered. But, as we're going to see, God kept his end of the bargain, but they never learned to obey. And Joshua warned them, and he told them some things very straightforward. He taught in verse. Bobby, would you read Joshua 24:14-16, please?
Then Joshua says to the people, now respect the Lord and serve him fully and sincerely. Throw away the gods that your ancestors worshipped on the other side of the Euphrates River in Egypt. Serve the Lord. But if you don't want to serve the Lord, you must choose for yourselves today whom you will serve. You may serve the gods that your ancestors worshipped when they lived on the other side of the Euphrates, or you may serve the gods of the Amorites who lived in this country. As for me and my family, we will serve the Lord.
And so, verse 16, we see the people said, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. Well, we see how long this lasts. Joshua told them, it's up to you. Evidently, these people, even after all this time with everything they've been to, they've still got the gods they brought out of Egypt. They have still not given those up. Moses has died and Joshua is about to die. They have not learned their lesson. Sometimes people, it seems like they just can't. But it's not can't, they don't want to. After all God's done for them, delivered them, drove the people out on the other side of the Jordan River, and the nations over there had already, the tribes over there had already gotten their land, and they're over here now. And then, again in verse 21, the people said to Joshua, no, but we will serve the Lord. And then down in verse 24, the people said to Joshua, we will serve the Lord our God and we will obey his voice. And so, that sounds great, doesn't it? Do you ever feel that commitment? No matter what it costs, I'm going to serve God. But then have you ever felt yourself flipping back and thinking, there's more here than I can do. God's required more than I'm willing to give. And that's always the bottom line. It's more than we're willing to give. Then we see down in verse 31 how long the people were successful. Aurora, would you read Joshua 24:31, please?
Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, and had known all the deeds of the Lord which he had done for Israel.
Okay. And so now, here they are. Joshua's dead, and they serve him all the days of Joshua and the days of the elders that served under Joshua and went through all of these things. I don't know. These were the elders that survived. Were there no young men that saw everything that went on? Were there no younger men to carry that on? Did the fathers not teach their children?
I think that's the point. Because earlier when we were talking about, you know, we will serve the Lord, said we've seen what God did. You know, so people were standing there who saw this.
That's
and
true.
I don't know if it's just the elders, but you know, they said we'll serve God. We saw
this whole nation. Yeah. I don't care if you're not but 16 years old when you're brought out, 15 years old, 10 years old, and if you've seen all that God has done, all the blessings that God has given you, this great land you came in, the day you got there, there were houses for you to live in, there was crops for you to pick and eat. But that's all you had to do. Of course, the parents needed to instill and remind them God gave us all of this, but you would think that a child that young would, if they knew anything about God, they would understand that these were blessings. But at least we know the parents didn't teach them. Somewhere along the way, the parents made some errors. But you can't, just like if you raise children today and you die, and after you die they leave the Lord and they're in their 40s, is that your fault? No. Some of these people that after all the elders died, some of these people had to be getting elderly themselves. Had they not seen? Did they not remember? Could they not remember? So we need to be sure that our success is longer lasting than what these Israelites were. And we're so more blessed, even with all the great things they saw physically in their lives, with everything we can read of all that happened in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, we have the whole picture. And we have the ability, and all of us sitting in this room have had the blessing of being taught these things. So we need to, and we've got some young people here this morning. Y'all need to remember, someday you're going to be responsible for yourselves. You can't say, well, Mom and Daddy didn't tell me that. Y'all can read and y'all can understand. Okay, is there anything else about Joshua? I know we're just taking snippets of this, but already I can tell I'm going to have to kick it in gear if I'm going to finish all these lessons in December. Especially when I'm going to miss 3 weeks. Okay, we're going to be talking now about the Israelites that conquered and took possession of the land. And so we're going to shift our focus and our reading to Judges. Melissa, if you would read Judges 1:19, we'll start there.
Now the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country. And they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because they had iron chariots.
Okay. Landon, would you read verse 21, please?
And the children of Benjamin did not drive out the
Jebusites
that inhabited Jerusalem, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem until this day.
Linda, read verse 27.
But Manasseh did not take possession of Bethshean, and his villages are Tanakh, or his villages are the inhabitants of Dor, or his villages are the inhabitants of Avim, or his villages are the inhabitants of Megiddo, and his villages, so that the Canaanites persisted in living in that land.
Okay, and we're not going to read all these because you just continue to go on. 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 35. They did not drive out the inhabitants of the land. And that was one of the greatest commandments God gave them. And so, you know, they haven't, as long as Joshua and everybody, and as long as God was driving out the inhabitants of the land, they were happy with that. It wasn't so hard for them. I'm sure they had some battles, but God was giving, they knew when they went in, God was going to give them the victory. Would God have continued to give them the victory if they would have done what they were supposed to do?
Yes,
they would have all been driven out.
He did Judah,
Yeah, I mean, but that was...
And then he went before them and he gave them the land. But because of their disobedience, evidently he didn't give them the land after that.
Okay, let's turn to Susan Dunbar. Would you read Judges chapter 2, verse 1 through 3?
When the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Moshe and said, I led you up from Egypt and brought you to the land of which I swore to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars. But you have not obeyed me, my voice. Why have you done this? Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall be thorns in your side, and your God shall be a snare to you.
So what was the consequences of them not trusting and doing what God said?
It wasn't unhelpful.
That's right. You're on your own kind of deal. And, of course, I guess they didn't care. Could they have changed at this point when God told them this?
Sure.
And had they repented, wouldn't God have come back? He always has. Verse 2 is very interesting. It says, you have not obeyed me. I told you not to make covenants with these people, but you have not obeyed me. So it's kind of like God said, okay, I've had enough. And so we read in what's going to happen through this the rest of this whole book is the cycle. But in chapter 2, verse 10 through 14, the consequences of their actions, they fall into this great deep sin, and they cry out to God, and God hears them. He still loves these people. And God... they're suffering first. They're just suffering because of their sin. They cry to God, and then God saves them. And throughout this whole book, that's what's going to happen. It's just going to be one repeat after another, just a continual line until we get to the last part of Judges, which we will not deal with. But if you haven't read that in a while, read how far into degradation and sin they had fallen. And then we'll see that he sends Samuel. But so God continued to save these people. How did he do that? Chapter 2, verse... Susan, would you read verse... Did you just read?
Ellen.
Okay. Sally, would you read Judges 2, 16 and 18?
Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges, which delivered them out of the hand of those that spoiled them. And when the Lord raised them up judges... Then the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of the enemies of all the days of the judge. For it repented the Lord because of their groaning by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them.
Okay, so how did God come through for them every time? He'd send them a judge. He would send somebody. And these judges were not like what we think of today as they're sitting on the bench and deciding. He's a deliverer. He comes to deliver them from the oppression that they are having. We don't want to think about the judge on the bench with the robes and all that. These are men that went out and fought for these people to save them. Joanne, read verse 19, and let's see what they would...
But it came about when the judge died, that they would turn back and act more corruptly than their fathers, and following other gods to serve them and bow down to them. They did not abandon their practices or their sober ways.
Have you ever known somebody that, due to their own lack of faith and lack of stability or whatever, maybe they've never known God or maybe they have, that just people would help them and get them out of a mess, and what happens almost immediately when that situation is all passed and everything's calmed down? Do they stay strong? What happens so many times? Back down to where they were. And sometimes they're in worse shape. These people would act worse. They got worse every cycle. And as we see, as we get to the end of the book, which we won't go to, but when you get to the end of the book, it's like there's no turning back. These people have just gone totally off the deep end. And then, Aurora, would you read verse 20 through 23 of Judges chapter 3?
Ahab came to them while he was sitting alone.
Am I wrong?
Judges chapter 3, verse 20.
Chapter 2. I'm sorry. I said 3. I'm sorry. A mistake.
Verse 23. So the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he said, "This part of this nation has transgressed my covenant, my community to their fathers, and has not listened to my voice. I also will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left them behind, in order to test Israel by them, whether they will keep the way of the Lord, to walk in it as their fathers did or not. So the Lord allowed the nations to remain, not driving them out quickly, and leading up Israel into the hand of Joshua."
Okay. So Joshua was dead by this time, and so I'm not exactly sure. Maybe this started before Joshua died, but he saw this. Anyway, at this point, God says, pretty much, "I'm done." They keep transgressing his covenant. They won't listen to his voice. And so now they're going to pay the consequences. And so that's what happens to us when we won't listen to God. You know, we have salvation. God's told us how to have salvation and to maintain that salvation. And I believe God works in our lives to try to help us. I know he will not allow Satan to tempt us more than we're able to bear. But that doesn't mean that we can just open the door to Satan and do anything and everything we want to that he wants us to do and still expect God to deliver us every time. That something's going to come swooping in and save us. No, we've got to not save ourselves, but we have to work on our own salvation. It's not just something that, you know, it's kind of like I got my ticket punched and I'm on the bus and now I'm going the right place. You can get off that bus at any time. And you may not find another stop to get back on as quickly as you would like. Okay, any questions or comments about Joshua or the children of Israel?
Just a thought when you were talking about how God having pity on them because of their suffering, so he sent a deliverer, and of course God so loved that he sent Jesus. I mean, we were undone, we were probably yet sinners. And then you see God gives so many chances. Mm-hmm. And then here, God still loves them. He still has a covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, and he's going to bring about the Christ. But he allows the suffering. He allows, you know, he's not going to have pity on them this time. Mm-hmm. And so we sometimes try God. You know, well, he loves me. He's not going to let this happen. He's not going to let that happen. And we need to be careful because, number one, our faith could be tested. But God allows consequences to happen. And he loved them. But he didn't drive those nations out.
And we see that God, sometimes our tests, and it's God's not testing us, but God allows Satan to test us. And sometimes it's when we think that we're strong, it's when we're the weakest, because our defenses are not up. Sometimes we can feel like, oh boy, you know, my life is great. There have been times in my life I just think, man, everything's going rosy. Well, then all of a sudden, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and somebody hits you, and you think, man, that was a bus I didn't see coming. And I don't mean physical. I mean spiritually. Somebody, they knock the props out from under you, and they think, man, you think, what happened here? And your faith is tested, and you have to say, okay, no matter what the consequence is here, I've got to serve God. I cannot let these people derail me. I've got to examine myself and be sure if they're making accusations against me that they're not true, and be honest with myself and look in the mirror and say, okay, what do you need to change here? But don't change something just because somebody blamed you for something or something that they say you did that you never, you don't know how they interpreted out of what happened, what they said. But anyway, so the children of Israel continued on in this, and they go, Samuel is the last judge that they have. And poor Samuel, was he perfect? No, his sons, when I read about his sons, and then there were Eli's sons when he came in and he saw how bad Eli's sons were, but evidently he couldn't see his own sons. And so sometimes when it comes to our children, we're blinded. But the children of Israel decide they want what? Like what? Okay, if they've driven those nations out and made themselves separate, who was, they had a king. Who was their king? God was their king. But they didn't want God as their king. They wanted this. They wanted to be like everybody else. When we start wanting to be like everybody else, that's a big red flag. Just because everybody else is doing it doesn't make it wrong, but does it make it right? No. And so we need to examine. And let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 8. Melissa, if you would read verse 5 through 7. Mm-hmm. I think it's your turn. I lose track.
And they said to him, behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your way. Now appoint a king over us to judge us like all the nations. But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them, like all the deeds which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, and that they have forsaken me and served other gods. So they are doing to you also.
How did God feel about them? Well, we talked about why they wanted a king in the first place. What was their? What did God say the reason was that they wanted a king? They rejected him. Samuel felt like they were rejecting him. Were they rejecting Samuel? Yes, they were. But the main point was they were rejecting God. And that was the big deal, was that was who they had rejected. Chapter 8, verse 7, it says, how did God feel about giving them a king? How did God, what was God's...
Well, they do what they want. If they want one, okay, I'm going to let them have it.
That's right. And y'all have
a
wrong verse on your thing. I'm sure you figured that out. Look at Hosea chapter 3, verse 11, not Hebrews. I don't know what happened there, except sometimes my thing auto-corrects, and I'm not sure if it auto-corrected or I just typed it in wrong. I have no idea. It's been too long ago. But when I got there, I thought, this is not right. I didn't think it was in Hebrews in the first place, but I went and looked, and I thought, this isn't right. Landon, can you read Hosea chapter 13, verse 11?
I gave thee a king in mine anger and took him away from
So this tells me that God was mad. Verse 9, it says, it is your destruction, O Israel, that you are against me, your help. In other words, they had turned against God. He was their help. And you know, when somebody, I like to remember this verse when I hear women say, I'm more important than just a helper. I don't want to be just a man's helper. A helper is a pretty good thing. God is our helper. How important is that? So being a helper is not a degradation or a degrading thing. But anyway, he goes on to say, where now is your king that he may serve you in all your cities? And your judges whom you requested, give me a king and princes. And then that's when he says, I gave them to you in my anger, and now he's taking them away. This is in Hosea, and this is in the time when the nations are falling, and Judah, I'm not sure, this may be, Israel may already be gone by this time. I don't remember my prophets that well, right off the top of my head. I have to go back and look at my notes. But
at the same time
in Isaiah. And so, anyway, the kings have not helped them any. The kings did them no service. And God knew that was going to be the case. But who is our king today? Christ is our King God. Christ is God, and He is our King. We're in His kingdom. And so that's what we remember. We need to remember very, very much so. Let's see. Let me look right here. I've got a verse. I'm sure I've got the right one. Turn to chapter 12, and Linda, would you read verse 16 and 17 of 1 Samuel 12?
Even now, take your stand and see this great thing which the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not the wheat harvest today? I will call to the Lord that he may send thunder and rain. Then you will know and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord by asking for yourselves a king.
So God considered this great wickedness. Yeah. And these people, I don't know. How can they? It looks like they would all fall down and say, forget it. Oh, God, we've made a big mistake. We want to keep you as our king. But they don't do that. And so God gives them a king. But there was a requirement that was given for them to succeed. Chapter 12, verse 13 through 15. Susan? Read chapter 12, verse 15 through 13 through 15.
13 through 15. Now therefore, here is the king whom you have chosen and whom you have desired. And take note, the Lord has set a king over you. If you fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and do not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then both you and the king who reigns over you will continue to follow the Lord your God. However, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then the hand of the Lord will be against you, as it was against your fathers.
So what was, here again, he gave them the requirement. It's nothing new. What do they have to do?
Follow him.
Follow him. Fear the Lord and serve him. Listen to his voice. Do not rebel against the command of the Lord. Do you think God knew he was wasting his breath when he said this? How many times has he told them this? But they will not listen. It seems like they are determined to go the other way. And if they don't listen, he tells them what's going to happen. Then the hand of the Lord will be against you and your fathers. And that's the same thing he's been telling them since he brought them out of Egypt. Listen to me. But they never do. And so it's a really sad thing. We're going to stop here because it's a good place to break, because the next few questions deal with Saul and the mess he made of things. And so We'll pick up here with Saul. Saul's their first foray, or whatever you want to call it, into a king. And God chose the kind of king he thought the people wanted, or they thought the people wanted. He knew what kind of man they wanted, and they got Saul. And we're going to see that looks can be deceiving. Okay.